You're listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast.
We're very serious crafters,
and we craft very serious crafts.
Very serious. Hi, and thanks for listening to our first podcast episode. Da-da-da! This is Haley from Red Handled Scissors, and I'm going to be trying really hard not to swear while we record.
Thank you, Haley. I am Molly from Wild Olive, and today we're going to be talking about crafts because, well, crafts are kind of our life. It's what we spend most of our time doing, and we are so excited to welcome you to listen in. So we're just going to jump right in and get started. Haley, I know you wanted to talk about your latest crafting obsession.
Yes, I have been spending pretty much all of my waking hours recently making bobbin lace. And for those of you who don't know what bobbin lace is, it's a very, very old form of making lace that involves many, many wooden bobbins and a pillow and lots of pins. If maybe you have taken an art history class in your life, there is this Vermeer painting from the mid-1600s that is called The Lace Maker. And if you maybe want to go ahead and Google that right now, just to have a visual, basically, that painting looks exactly how making bobbin lace still looks today. It just hasn't changed since then. So it's super fun, and I'm really into it.
Yeah, I my knowledge of this kind of lace making has come from seeing it really, I think, on a couple of different shows that I've watched, where one was the show Lark Rise to Candleford, which is, of course, based on books. But it's there and it's, you know, set in a time when that would have been pretty normal to be doing. But then I also saw it on a show that was about, like, the English countryside, and it showed someone still doing it now. And I always look at it and I think, well, that just looks really complicated. But, of course, it's beautiful. But as you've told me, you know, this is an involved process, but not, like you said, it's just a few different steps at a time.
Yeah, it can look really complicated. There are sometimes, you know, 20, sometimes 30, sometimes hundreds of bobbins in play while you're working on bobbin lace. And so if you just look at someone's lace pillow, it basically looks like a mad octopus. And, like, maybe it might attack you because there's a lot going on there. And so but when you're actually doing at least the kind of lace that I've been making, which is called torchon lace, which is French for twist. Pretty much any project that I'm working on, there are only two pairs of bobbins that are active at any given point, and the rest of them are just kind of hanging out. They aren't really doing anything. I don't need to know what they're doing. I don't care what they're doing. I mean, I guess I don't care what they're doing as long as they aren't making a twisty knot, but I can ignore them. And so while it looks complicated and it isn't a particularly straightforward process to learn, it's one of those crafts where, you know how most things you can probably learn from a book?
Yes.
This is not one of those things that I would recommend learning from a book. You really, like, I think in order to not end up incredibly frustrated, you want to find a lace maker who can teach you how to do it in person. Because once you've got a human being who can look at something and see what you did wrong, it actually, the individual stitches themselves aren't difficult. It's just not the most straightforward process when you're first learning.
So even more, you wouldn't even say, watch a YouTube video. You would say, still far better to have someone working on it with you in person.
Yeah. I actually, when I first learned about bobbin lace, it was because I was reading, I'm really into crafting related cozy mystery books, and bobbin lace was like the way one of the mysteries was solved in this book that I was reading. And now, of course, I can't remember off the top of my head what the book was called, but we'll have to include that in the show notes later in case you're interested.
But I'm going to be interested, so you're going to have to find that for me.
Yeah, I definitely will. But this whole book was just about basically solving a murder mystery, and bobbin lace was the sort of the foundation of unraveling the clues. And I just became really interested because what is this craft that I've never even heard of before? Like, I pride myself as someone who's tried most anything, and I had no idea what it was.
I would say that I would think of you as someone who is fairly well-versed in a variety of things. But as you said, when you find something that is new to you, there's always going to be that, I got to get curious about this. So that's cool. I actually, even your geeking out about this is kind of making me want to dig into it and learn all that I can.
Oh, it's so much fun. And I searched for a class to take because I tried, of course, to find books that were reasonable to teach it. And I looked around on YouTube, and those things exist, but most of the resources, especially books, are quite old, and there's just not the clarity there. And I'm someone who's self-taught or book-taught in almost everything. This is, I believe, the first time I have ever taken a class to learn how to do something. And so when I finally found a local teacher, and then subsequently a local lace guild, which is now also amazing because I have an entire group of lace geeks that I get to hang out with all the time. Like, it was just so much fun. And learning how to do it, it was one of those things that I took an entire month of once a week 4-hour classes, and I was so obsessed that even when I got home from this 4-hour class, all I wanted to do was make lace. And I still feel that way. And that was in October.
That's a pretty decent obsession for something new. I like it.
Yeah, I'd say it's a touch of an obsession,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you've already invested all that time into it, so you may as well keep going.
Yeah, and I mean, there are endless patterns and endless ways to make it more difficult. So I'm pretty delighted. There's not a limit anytime soon in what I can do. But enough about my obsession. Let's talk about what you've been working on. I noticed that you made a really, really adorable cat toy. And as a confirmed cat lady, I'm pretty into it.
Yeah, I was really pleased with this latest cat toy that I made. It's simple. I'd like to say that in its aesthetic stylings that Martha Stewart would approve. I'm just making that up. I don't know that she wouldn't care. But
no, I completely agree. I saw it on your Instagram. It's very cute.
I tried. And it only required several prototypes to get everything to match up. But the real success with this was it was the first cat toy that I've made that my cat actually had any interest in.
That's huge.
Yeah. But I realized what the secret that I had been missing all this time was obviously catnip. she didn't really care about the toy. She just cared about the catnip. And, you know, I should have been better prepared for this. I ordered the catnip online, and it was inside a metal tin inside the packing box, and the cat was already going after the box.
Oh, no, I know where this is headed.
I knew she was interested. She got I had taken the tin out of the box, and she got the tin. Thankfully, it did not open all over the place. That was a good save. I made three of these little felt mice, and I got them all to the point where all that was left to do was add the catnip and sew them closed so that I could do it all at one time, thinking there was a chance that she would start showing interest once I started working on them. And I wanted them to all look nice for my pictures and everything. Well, it started with her finding the spoon I had used. And, like, she was caressing it and rubbing herself all over it, which was fun to watch, you know? I mean, who doesn't like watching a cat start to get strung out on catnip? But then I think she realized, oh, there's catnip out somewhere. It's in Molly's lap. She's holding these things. She's keeping them from me. And she just started, like, I was in a chair and they were kind of pushed, you know, to the side of me and covered, and she was digging at me. Then she realized my hands smelled of it, and she started trying to lick my hands, and then she was biting at me, which she never does. And then she hissed at me when I wouldn't let her continue her attack on me. So you can imagine, I'm trying to stitch these things closed, but I have a cat right in my face, you know, going after everything. So I finally, I got her to be distracted. I don't even know what I did to distract her, but she left. I finished everything up, got a few photos, and I found her sleeping on the bed and put a cat or a catnip mouse in front of her. And she, you know, of course, immediately perked up, and I got some nice pictures of her playing with it. She played with them for a few minutes. Now she's sort of lost interest again. Probably at some point when I'm not looking, she will enjoy the mice again. But
she can have them.
Yes, exactly.
She couldn't have them. So
yeah, there's no, it's that forbidden fruit that she wanted. But oh my goodness.
Oh, cats.
Exactly. You know, she will always mess with my embroidery floss or, you know, she will knock things off or jump into the middle of a picture I'm trying to work on. But here was the time I needed her to help me out with a project, at least for the photos for a project. And she delivered in a small way. So what more can I ask?
Yeah, that's true. At least she was game for the photos. That's really all you can ask.
Yeah, you know, she kind of earned her keep, I guess.
Oh, that's really adorable.
Darcy Cat, if you're listening, I really do love and appreciate you for all you do laying around the house.
It's hard work. It is hard work being a cat.
But somebody's got to do it.
It's true.
I did read the other day on Twitter, it was a whole list of the average number of hours that different animals sleep. And a cat is like an average of like 12.2 hours a day or something. And I thought, that sounds about right. I could sleep like a cat. I could handle 12 hours of sleep a day. That would work for me.
Oh, yeah, that would be fine.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. But, oh, well, a girl can dream.
I mean, especially if you're if you're a self-employed maker of things, sleep is an afterthought, at least for me.
Yeah. It was about 11:30 last night when I was sending off patterns to a publisher for approval. So, you know, this is just
That's pretty early.
Well, Yeah, I've learned that I still have to value my sleep, but still, you know, get things done. And there, I was sending it to England, so we get that time delay thing. It's necessary to send things earlier than later. But anyway,
no, that makes that's a good point. I too am trying to remember to actually go to sleep. It sometimes works. Sometimes.
Yeah. But my understanding is that you have plenty of things to keep you busy when you are not sleeping, because spring and the urge to purge and clean and get ready for a new season of crafting has come along for you.
Oh, yes. There is a spring cleaning bee in my bonnet at the moment.
You, by the way, you do look good in your spring cleaning bee-filled bonnet. It's very charming.
Oh, why, thank you. Yes, it's, I mean, it's a little uncomfortable and a little loud, but, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Exactly.
But, it's the need to get rid of all of my extraneous nonsense has hit full force this past week, and I have, like, in my apartment in general, I have repotted all of my plants. I have gone through the bathroom and tossed all of, like, the expired Tylenol and shampoo that is never going to be used. And I am systematically working my way through my entire apartment, trying to sort of clear my space and clear my mind a bit, and just get ready for some new things. You know, new season. I don't know. It seems like the right thing to do. And the thing that I am most terrified of finally having to do is my craft studio. And to give you a little bit of context here, I live in a tiny Brooklyn apartment. I also happen to work in that tiny Brooklyn apartment. And so my studio space is about maybe 8 feet by 12 feet, and that's probably being generous. And so it is a very small space. And so it's generally pretty organized. It has some nice, like, built-in shelving and pegboards, and I have a desk and a work table. It's sort of a horseshoe setup, and so I've got good storage space, and also very tall ceilings, which helps with being able to have storage space up above. But I have this little problem that perhaps you can relate to, which I think is maybe crafty FOMO, the fear of missing out by way of having thrown something away that I will immediately thereafter need.
Yes. Well, first, that's a perfect term for this. I love it. And yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I would say it's not always completely unfounded, because there have been times where I have gotten rid of something, and like 2 weeks later, I need that exact thing. And I don't.
Oh, it happens literally every time I throw anything away. Yeah, I mean, it's real.
I hesitate to even say it for fear of like reinforcing this idea of don't get rid of anything. But it happens.
Oh yeah, it has happened to me with such frequency that it is like, I am afraid to get rid of the things that, like, things I have never needed, I'm still afraid to get rid of. And, like, I'm a fiber and fabric crafter, and I have a truly ridiculous quantity of paper crafting related supplies and machines, and just an overwhelming amount of stuff that isn't even the kind of projects that I personally design and work on. I don't know where some of this stuff came from. I think it multiplies in the night. But even that stuff, I have this slight hesitation. But this year, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get rid of the stuff I don't need, and I'm going to make my workspace an area that makes it really easy to work on the projects that I actually enjoy working on. And I think it's going to make my work days like 1,000 times better, at least.
I'm sure it will. Well, I will personally cheer you on, and I will expect updates. But I feel like if you're doing it, it might inspire me to do a little bit of my own purging and organizing. And I have like the opposite situation of you. I have, I have a small space. Like my room, basically. For those of you who don't know, I live with my family, with my parents and 5 siblings. And I'm in a suburb of Chicago. So we've got a decent sized house. You know, it's still full and busy with 8 people living here. I like to say it's nice to still be able to live with my family because, I craft for a living. So, you know, they still sort of support me in a small way as needed. You know, you never know how this business is going to go. But anyway, so I have like this little loft bedroom area, and then an added on, you know, it's referred to as my office or my little craft studio, which is probably about 4 by 6 feet. It's technically on the blueprints as a closet, but it does have a desk and it has a wall full of shelves and cabinets, which is great. But everything just seems to overflow. It's like, it's just everywhere. And I have stacks of things. And I tend to, at the end of a project, there's just extraneous things around, whether that be pattern pieces that are printed or, I don't know, odds and ends that just don't seem to have a place. And I'm terrible about dealing with them. I collect clutter like Pigpen collects dirt around him. I don't know what to do with it. I have stacks of magazines and I'm still looking at renewing my subscriptions. You know, like what am I going to do? It needs to get under control, but it really is time to do something about it. And I'm, you know, again, how much of it do I get rid of? How much do I keep? Do I try and sell some stuff? Do I just donate things? At what point is there that point of like, oh, now I'm just being wasteful? It's a mess, but it is time to start tackling it. I know that the rest of my family would be thrilled.
Oh, I understand.
Oh boy. This is dangerous stuff to have this be like your whole life is to work with these materials that you really do use and need.
Oh, it is. But can you imagine how delightful it will be to walk into a space that where you know where the stuff that you need actually is, and you can reach it, and you don't have to move like 30 things that are not that thing before, like 30 things that are not that thing that you don't actually ever use to get to the one thing that you do behind it. I mean, that right there, that is the reason that that I'm going to power through it. I'm gonna do it.
I do truly look forward to that. I will confess, one of the recent things that I finished making was a knit like shawlette kind of thing. And for a short while, I couldn't remember where I had put this almost finished project. It was just sort of like in the chaos. I don't know. I did find it. It was naturally in a Dayglow colored Pearl Soho bag. Because
of course,
because it should have been easy to spot, but I just kind of had to process through that. So I've pulled it out, and now I can actually finish it. It was it was a project that I started and I finished knitting in a rather short amount of time. And then there's that last step of weaving in the ends and blocking it. And I always stop short there. And so it's now been sitting since January. I wove it.
Oh, January ain't nothing. I just want you to know that I once had a sweater that I made, a cardigan, over 3 years. The last 2 years was it sitting in my closet just needing the ends woven in and blocking. Like, it was done, and it took me 2 years to bring myself to that point. So, girl, okay. I believe you.
I don't feel too bad. The one that I made before this sat for about a year before I blocked it. So the fact that I'm even thinking about it now, just a few months later, that already felt like a huge accomplishment. But now I feel really encouraged, and maybe I'll actually do it. It's so pretty, and I know that I still have a little bit of time. I could wear it this spring.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it'll sit a long time because I'll go, well, I can't really wear this in the summer, and yeah.
Yeah, the seasons are definitely to blame for why my 3-year sweater took 3 years, because then it got warm. Like, there was no reason for me to actually have to deal with this thing. But I will say that once I finally did it, it took like 2 hours of time, maybe, while I was like watching Downton Abbey or something, and then it was done. And then I rolled my eyes at myself and the 3 years that thing was in limbo.
I think that's always the way with those kinds of projects. So we always think it's going to be worse than it really is, and then afterwards we go, well, that was silly. Why did I do that? Oh well.
Oh, yeah. I think everybody has at least one of those projects. And if they say they don't, they're probably full of nonsense.
Yes. So if you're listening to this and you are in denial that you have that never-ending project that really could just be finished, like, let's get it together, okay? Finish it.
Yeah. Or you should tell us about it.
Yes, that's even better.
Yeah, we will provide our social media information at the end, and you can confess to us. Maybe we'll come up with a hashtag for it.
I like that. Let's work on that. So what else is good? What else are we going to talk about here?
Oh, next, it is spring wardrobe time. It's at that time of the year when I'm going to have to fight with petiting patterns, which is a constant struggle for me. I am basically 5 feet tall, but built like a 40s bombshell. So I'm child size, but not child shape. And it's a struggle to find clothes that fit. I don't think, I'm actually currently wearing a pair of little boys' pants that have the elastic adjustable waist. And so I can pull the elastic and make the waist smaller so I don't have that ridiculous gap that comes when you are a lady with a backside. And I am pretty delighted about that. But it's not a really good solution for, like, everyday clothing. It's clear that I'm wearing children's pants. And so this spring, my plan is to just wear comfortable dresses, which has sort of long been my uniform. Like, a comfy dress and a cardigan and a pair of tights is basically what I like to wear. It's easy, it's comfortable, and it looks like I tried when I didn't.
I found that there are certain styles of dresses where it kind of just feels like you're walking around in a nightgown.
Yes. It's wonderful. And that is exactly, exactly what I'm going for. So I have a couple of patterns. There's this really cute dress with patch pockets on the front that's Simplicity 1080 that Dottie Angel did with Simplicity. And it is super cute.
Yeah, I have that pattern and I have fabric to make it and everything, but I have not sewn it yet. So maybe we will have to both sew our semi-matching dresses.
Yes, I've had fabric since last summer for this dress. So I think we definitely should. And I've also been looking at the factory dress from Merton & Mills, which is basically like it's a front zipper dress. It has relatively little shape, although I will have to add some shape because, again, with the weird proportions, otherwise I look like I'm playing dress up and not in a good way. So I'm doing those two things, which are relatively easy to fit. And then I'm going to do something real dumb. I'm going to tackle actual pants.
Actual pants.
Actual pants. And, I mean, I've made pants before, but we're talking, like, zip and button fly with pockets, straight leg, actual pants. And not jeans, because well, jeans are not on the top of my list of things that I need, but I am going to tackle my bizarro butt to waist ratio. It's going to happen. I'm pretty excited about that. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I know that it's difficult. I have done pants fitting before, but if I can nail, like, a pair of just casual everyday pants that I can just make in whatever fabric that I need for any, basically a pants sloper is what I want. And I'm going to do it. It is my spring-summer goal.
I love it. I love it.
And I'm terrified.
But as you said, once you've done this successfully, even if it takes a while to get it right, you'll have it under your belt, so to speak.
Literally.
I wasn't even intending to make a joke like that. What happened? Yeah. Anyway.
I don't know. Or I won't need a belt. That's actually the goal.
That's even better. Well, you could just wear a belt because you feel like it and because it looks cute, but not because it's actually needed. But, then it'll be this. It'll be like a badge of honor to have done that. And you know, any time that you can learn some new skill like that, that's always good.
Yeah. Do you think I can get an I Made Pants merit badge? I feel like that should be a thing.
I think we can arrange that.
Awesome.
All right, we'll work on it.
Yep. So I hear that you've been having some interesting dreams lately.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose some people wouldn't think that this was all that interesting, but, like, to me, when I start dreaming about pipe cleaners or chenille stems, I mean, that's a little bit strange. That particular supply is maybe not typical for me, but I will say, like, it's not all that unusual for me to have a crafting-related dream. In this case, it was, like, I kind of woke up with this dream and I was planning out this project that I'm trying to still work on this week, to make little pipe cleaner bunny rabbits. And, I don't know, in my dream, I was, you know, folding and twisting and wrapping and planning out all of the steps for it. And I mean, that's normal for me. I hesitate to say that, but, I don't know. Have you ever, like, had crafting related dreams?
You know, it's funny you should say that, because basically every time I am learning a new skill, I generally fall asleep thinking about it and trying to figure out, like, especially if it's something that I've messed up or something that is a very new skill. I will often dream about it and then know how to do it when I wake up, which makes some sense. That's, I think, how the neurons in your brain, I think sleep allows for those connections to be made. Like, that is a known fact of learning.
Yeah.
But I definitely did nothing but dream about lace for the entire month of intensive classes. And I also, I just finished up writing a cross-stitch book that's coming out in the fall, which is called The Improper Cross-Stitch. You can pre-order it from pretty much anywhere if you want to look it up. You know, shameless plug.
No shame.
Definitely. Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't feel particularly ashamed, but, you're supposed to say that.
Just plug the book. That's a good thing.
Thank you. But I definitely designed cross-stitch patterns in my dreams the entire time I was writing that book.
Yeah, our brains just, they just don't stop working. And obviously, whatever you're kind of spending a lot of your time thinking about, it makes sense for you to be thinking through those things in your dream. The only thing I wish is that I could actually accomplish those things in my sleep. You know, like that it isn't just a dream, but that I could actively get those things done simply because I was dreaming about it. That would be really helpful.
That would be so productive.
Yeah, because it seems like I'm frequently working hard while I'm asleep in my dreams. So I should see something from that.
I agree completely. I think we should write a sternly worded letter to the universe on that particular subject.
Yeah. Or, I mean, at the very least, if we could invent some way that, you know, our hands could kind of actively connect to what we're dreaming about. Although I suppose that wouldn't be restful. So,
No. Although I do know a few people who have fallen asleep knitting and who have continued to knit. Oh, like sort of similar to people who guards who sleep with their eyes open. I think it's sort of related to that. I don't think it's normal, and it's probably not like deep sleep, but I definitely have seen knitters nod off.
That's really impressive, because I sometimes have a hard time knitting accurately while I'm awake and actually paying attention to what I'm doing, so...
I mean, don't we all?
I tend to be the knitter who gets to the end of a row and goes, I'm off by a stitch. Eh, oh, well, move on. Yeah, that's all right. You know, I kind of look at it and go, well, I'll know it's there, but I'm just not bothered by it. Sometimes you have to go back and fix a thing, but.
Yeah, but you know what? If only you will ever know, and like you can just make one somewhere and it won't be visible. It falls under the life is too short category most of the time.
Yeah. We have this story at my house where I'm not going to name any names, but someone that we know was doing some construction work or hanging something. I don't recall specifically, but they had a level out and, the bubble on the level was not right in the center. And they kind of looked at it and they went, well, you know, it's half a bubble. It's on half a bubble level. And that's just sort of become a way of referring, well, you know, the knitting project, it was within half a bubble. That's good enough.
And I mean, for something that can be blocked, it truly is good enough.
Yeah. You have to decide where that line is for you.
I mean, if you're building a table, maybe not. Maybe you'd like that to be sturdy. But there are lots of good arguments to be made for something that is just fine, as opposed to being stressed out about it. I'm really bad at that, personally. I'm a little... Well, I actually have OCD. And so when I say that OCD me does not like it, I truly mean that, not just as a joke, but it has been truly freeing to every once in a while just be able to sit back and be like, actually, no, that would take probably 3 hours to fix and it wouldn't look any different. And so I'm not doing it.
Good for you. I feel like between the two of us, there's like this nice happy medium of that obsessing just the right amount. Maybe we'll rub off on each other.
Yeah, I think we have complementary areas in which we are chill and not chill. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. Yeah. So how do you think we should wrap this up here today?
Gosh, I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty much out of things that I have gotten up to today.
I think that means it's time for us to both get back to work and start doing some more crafting so we have more to talk about next time.
Oh, yeah. Good point. We probably should do that. All right. Well, I will talk to you next time, and we will provide some show notes with some of the things that we've been talking about afterwards, and we will see you all soon.
All right. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast. Be sure to visit veryseriouscrafts.com for show notes, serious social media links, and more.